Blog Talk Radio.
The following broadcast is brought to you by the iGolf Sports Network. The Women of Golf Show is sponsored by the iGolf Sports Network and Golf Tips Magazine. iGolf Sports is a live stream broadcast and media production company providing quality programming designed to attract the golfing enthusiast. And Golf Tips, the game's most in-depth instruction magazine with insightful reviews on the latest equipment, tips from top teaching professionals, helping you improve your game from tee to green. Good morning. Welcome to the Women of Golf, the number one women's golf show around the world, with hosts Ted Odorico and Cindy Miller. Join them as they interview some of the best players from the Epson, LPGA, and Legends Tour, and so many others helping to elevate women's golf. So without further ado, here are your hosts, Ted and Cindy.
All right, good morning, everybody, and once again, welcome to the Women of Golf Show. I'm Ted Odorico, and right alongside, of course, each and every week is none other than Legends Tour player and LPGA professional, Cindy Miller, and we are your hosts here on the Women of Golf. Good morning, Cindy.
Good morning, dear. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. It's another beautiful sunny day here where I am, and I'm super excited about today's show for two reasons. We're going to have our first Epson Tour winner of the season, so I'm always excited about that. We're going to talk to her in just a moment, and then we're going to have a discussion a little bit later on, and it's going to be a realistic timeline for your game improvement. We're going to talk a little bit about what people should expect at various stages of learning this game. So we're going to talk a little bit about that. And, of course, I'm always excited to have you right here beside me, as it were, on the show. So that's, I guess, three. That would be three things. So let me introduce our guest, and then I'm going to shut up, and I'm going to let you do the first interview with her. So our very special guest is the winner of the 2024 Florida Natural Charity Classic. Her name is Valerie Plata, and she had actually a pretty impressive career, including being a three-time All-Big Ten team selection during her time at Michigan State University. And her sophomore year in 2020, she was named the Big Ten Player of the Year, and she also won the Big Ten's Mary Fossum Award in 2021 for having the season's lowest stroke average to par. Her success continued into 2021 with her win at the Women's Amateur Latin America, and most recently, as I mentioned, her victory at the Epson Tour's 2024 Florida's Natural Charity Classic, which just took place this past week. So first event of the season and her very first professional win. So Cindy, let's welcome Valerie Plata.
Good morning.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
It's early. It's early.
You sound exhausted.
All right, Cindy,
so,
go ahead.
Tell us, what's it feel like to be the champ?
Feels great. I don't think it's fully sunk in yet. It takes me a little bit for my brain and me to realize these kind of things, but just pretty happy about it right now.
That's awesome. That's just awesome. Let me ask you, are you more of a chill person who takes it in stride, or are you a competitive lunatic who does everything really fast?
I think I'm more of a chill kind of person. That's what I would consider myself anyways. So yeah.
Do you hit the ball real consistently?
Yes, that's what I try to do. Yeah, like when I'm having a good day, I'm pretty consistent overall.
And how long have you played golf?
I've been playing since I was about 8 and a half. Or maybe 9, so that would be 13 years.
And why do you like this game?
I just think I like the challenge of it, and I think I like to compete while playing it. I think it's just a good outlet for me to let that competitive side come out.
What do you like best about playing?
That you're never in the same situation twice. Like, no matter how similar it seems to be, it's never really the same.
Where are you from? Where'd you grow up?
Colombia, South America.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
And why in the world did you go to Michigan State?
Well, when I was in that recruiting process, I didn't. But towards the end of it, I was going to graduate in about 6 months when this happened, and I didn't have many great options. But I like to go to school and spend 4 years at different places. So I was waiting. I was probably going to wait one more year to go to school because I was young. I was 16 at the time. And so Michigan State just kind of long in those last 6 months, and they reached out, and I was like, all right. I went to visit in January just to see how cold it was, and I didn't really mind it. I fell in love with the place and the program and the coaches there. So I made a decision, and I left in the fall of that year, and yeah, that's how I ended up over there.
It's a pretty cool place, isn't it?
Yeah, it's pretty chilly.
I live in Buffalo. It's colder here. And I knew Mary Fossum. Isn't that something? Wow,
yeah.
That's so great. Good for you. That's great. Ted?
Yeah, that's a bit of a diversity from growing up in Columbia and heading up to Michigan. Certainly, I won't say it's the coldest area, but it's certainly a big difference. So I'm sure it took a little getting used to, but it was probably pretty exciting though for you, right? Because it's something different that you're not, I mean, you don't have snow, I'm sure, where you grew up in Colombia. So it was kind of interesting, I'm sure, to see some cold temperatures and maybe a little bit of white stuff, right?
Yep, that's correct.
Well, hopefully you didn't have to get out and shovel any of it and just got to see it coming down. It's always pretty. So one thing I want to go back to the event, because I neglected to mention, you actually ended up in a two-hole playoff with Anna Bellick, who's actually been on the show the last couple of years. So we're familiar with her, and you got into a two-hole playoff with her. Tell us about that sort of final round leading up into that, because she was pretty – competitive through the final round as well, obviously, and you guys ultimately ended up, did you kind of feed off of one another through, did you actually play with her in the final round?
I did, yes. We did play together.
Okay. That's what I thought. So did you guys kind of feed off, like when you're out there and obviously you're trying to win, so you don't want to necessarily certainly copy one another, but do you kind of feed off of one of the other's energy when you're playing?
Yeah, I think so. I think when you're playing in a tight situation like that, I mean, the three people were tied with the lead to start the day, so I think we all wanted to win, and we tried to play our way into the top. She played really well, and I mean, things ended in a tie in the playoffs, so it was a great day for both of us, I guess, before the playoffs.
Now, had you ever been in a playoff before?
Not really in like a serious event. I played one when I was maybe 12 in like a regional thing, but yeah, I guess this was my first kind of real one.
So that's kind of exciting in itself, just to be on a professional level, to be in a playoff and to come out on top. So that had to be obviously give you a boost of confidence moving forward for the rest of the season. So what are some of your goals this season? Obviously, you've I'm sure, accomplished the first one here, winning a tournament right from the start. But what were some of the goals that you set for yourself this season?
Yeah, I think winning, I said on an interview before that my coach and I were really focused on trying to win one of the first three events here in Florida. happened on the first one, which is great. But I think we're just trying to get better. I struggled a little bit last year, and I was not in a great place. So we've been working really hard, and I've been trying to stay really patient and committed to the process, and hoping the results will turn out. So as far as goals, I think it's just like being happy again on the golf course and competing, I think, is one of them for me personally. As far as results, obviously, we want to end in the top 10 at the end of the year to get the card to go to the LPGA. Just try to play in the best way possible every single event.
And something interesting, too, which is you kind of did things a little bit in reverse, because one of the other things I wanted to point out, that you actually earned your LPGA Tour card in 2022 when you attended the LPGA Q Series, and you actually finished tied for third. So last year you actually played on the LPGA. How was that experience? Because you got to play with some of the best players in the world. How was that experience for you last year, and what did you learn from that experience?
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely a learning year for me. Getting to see the best players in the world day in and day out, what they do, how they prepare, all those things, and just kind of, in a way, comparing yourself to that and seeing what you're missing to get there is great to see it up close. And, yeah, I learned a lot about that. I learned a lot about myself and how to travel. I think those were the biggest lessons for me last year.
What's the most challenging? You mentioned about travel. What's one of the most challenging things? Obviously, you have to play, at your best at all times, or certainly do that as best you can. What's some of the most challenging parts of being a tour player?
I think when you have the freedom to pick out a schedule, it's great. But when you feel like you need to play in every single thing that you get into, is when it gets a little hard and tricky, just trying to figure out when to take a break or when to just kind of push through and play as many events as you can.
I think that's good. Yeah, it's tough when you've never, because you're still new to the professional side of things, so you have to now, unlike when you play, in college or earlier on, where you have somebody sort of helping you or putting that schedule together, but now you've got to do everything on your own, essentially. So it's a lot more challenging. I want to ask you one more question, then I'll give it back to Cindy. I found this was kind of interesting to me. Now, you equipment in the bag, so what you play in the bag, you pretty much play all Titleist. In fact, your irons, your wedges, and so on, and so golf ball is Titleist. But I noticed when I was looking at what you did have one club that was different, and that was your three wood. You play a ping. How come you got that? How come you have that ping slipped in there? Is that a favorite club?
I tried it back in 2022 when I was still an amateur, and I think it's just really easy to hit off of fairway. Like, even if you don't have a great lie, It's kind of a flat three wood, so it looks really good when you set it on the ground, and it just looks easy to hit. So I tried it and I loved it, and I have a Titleist one back home, but I don't see a need to switch it up now.
Well, you know what? When you got something that works, you definitely don't want to switch it up. So that's good. I was just curious about that. Cindy, go ahead.
What's the most fun part about playing on tour?
Well, for me so far, last year I traveled with a really good friend of mine. We became even better friends traveling together all last year. She's another pro from Colombia, Mariajo Uribe. She She's really helping me out with this stuff. So I think that that's been the best thing for me so far. I think moving forward, she's going to, I think, stop playing pretty soon. She's been out there for a long time. So I think it'll be the same kind of trying to find your group of people you travel with and you kind of have a life outside of the golf course with.
It's hard. It can be pretty lonely, I think. Don't you think?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. I don't think people realize that, you know, it looks like it's all glamour and everything, but the hardest part for me was figuring out where you're going, how you're going to get there. You know,
mm-hmm.
playing golf was the easiest part of it. Is that what you found?
Yeah, I would agree with you.
Yeah. What's the best part of your game?
I'd say I'm pretty solid around the greens. Like my short game, I think, is pretty good. And, I mean, I've been working really hard on my putting, and I saw it pay off this past weekend. I think it's the best 3 days of putting I've had in my entire career. So I'd say right now is that, and hopefully I'm going to try to keep it that way for as long as possible.
That's awesome. When you made all these putts, were you allowing yourself to feel it? Look, I guess the question I have is how much were you following a process and then letting yourself feel it? Or were you thinking a lot? And how much right brain and left brain were you mixing, I guess, is what my question is. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I think up until I decide where I'm playing, like, the ball, like, how much break and all that stuff, I think about it then, but then after that, when I get into my routine with my practice swings, I just try to feel it as much as I can. I don't really focus on the technique when I'm out on the golf course. I'm just trying to hit my spots, and then when I finish and I talk to my caddy or I evaluate it for myself, it's when I say, oh, like, it was pretty good, or I need to work on this or that. So, yeah, I think that would be my answer.
I agree. And then it's just amazing to see it just roll in the hole.
Mm-hmm.
What do you do for fun when you're on tour and you're out there? What do you do for fun just to distract yourself?
I don't have that pinpointed yet. I think I'm still trying to figure that out. But I do enjoy reading and, you know, watching shows and that kind of stuff. I do it to just kind of relax my brain. And then I love baking. So when I'm at Airbnbs or houses, I try to bake something through the week. So I think that would be it so far.
Well, that's cool. What do you like to bake?
I think my go-to are probably like chocolate chip cookies or some kind of cake.
Yum. I want some. Do you like to practice?
I do like to practice. Sometimes more than just going out to play on the golf course when I'm at home. But something I'm trying to like more, just going out there and you know, hitting different shots and practicing different things. But, yeah, I do like to practice.
You sound just like my husband. My husband played on tour for 15 years, and he would rather stand on the practice tee all day long. And I'm, like, total opposite. I want to go play. He would rather just hit balls all day long.
Yeah.
God bless you. And you know what's funny? You make the better player all day long. All day long. You're going to be amazing at this. So keep doing what you're doing.
That's awesome.
Thank you, Ted.
So, Valerie, let me ask you, I couldn't agree more with what you said, Cindy, spot on. I think you have to definitely have to be passionate about what you do, and you have to and I'm looking forward. We're going to call you out, and Valerie, we want some bacon coming our way. So you make us something, some care if it's muffins, a little cake or something, but we're going to hold you to that. Make us something special. So when you're out on the golf course, and I know you're going to be familiar with this, some courses fit your eye better than others. So if you're, like, for instance, if you're a left to right player, if you typically fade the ball or if you draw the ball, certain holes, certain courses fit. When you get in a situation when you're playing a golf course, and let's say, are you typically a fader of the ball?
No.
Okay, you're a drawer of the ball.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So if you get on a hole that we would say it doesn't typically fade, it's more of a left to right hole as opposed to a right to left. Obviously you can make adjustments and things like that. What do you do in that situation? Because you have a routine that you're going through as you're playing. When you get to a hole that really does not fit your eye well, do you adjust your play differently, or you just keep plodding through as you normally would?
I would probably say I pay a little more attention to, you know, where my starting line would be, and even if, like, that means I can't hit a driver or something like that, I would, you know, try to figure it out in the practice round and make the adjustment there. I would also probably just go to the fairway, kind of where my ball would be, and look back to the tee box and kind of see, like, look at the space from that point backwards and kind of picture my ball flight and all of that. Yeah.
Were you okay? And the reason why I asked this is, you know, Jack Nicklaus famously talked about this very thing, and he said, you know, he was happy if he could just come away with a par on a hole like that. He wasn't, in other words, he didn't play as aggressively. Are you similar to that? Like, you obviously, if you get a birdie, or better, you know, that's fantastic. But do you play differently? Like, if you got away with a par in a hole like that, is that going to be okay for you?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, if there's a hole that's, you know, I feel like there's always one that just doesn't really fit your eye. And yeah, if I can get through it with the par, I'm more than happy to walk away with that.
And you're running to the next hole then, right? Which does fit your eyes. So, yeah. And that's what he talked about too. And yeah, that's why I asked that. Who was the first person, besides obviously your caddy and whatever, that knew, who was the first person that you called to tell you that, to tell them that you won this past week?
That I called, probably my parents. Like I said, my friend, Mariajo, was here playing the event too, and I had another friend from Paraguay. So yeah, there was a couple people I knew that were watching, which was really cool. And then Mariajo had my parents on the phone when I finished, so I think they were the first people I talked to.
Very good. Who was the person that introduced you to this game? Was it a parent? Was it a family member? Somebody else? Who first introduced you to golf?
My brother, my older brother. He started playing first, and then I followed him.
Playing competitive golf, or is he just like to play?
No, he doesn't really play anymore. He would go out maybe once a year with me, but it's not really his thing anymore.
Was there a point when you were able to beat him on the golf course?
Yeah. it didn't.
How was that day?
It didn't take a long time either. He was very, very easily upset with mistakes, so it was just take one or two things that went not his way, and he would be just out of his clothes. So.
Yeah, I think his little sister cured the golfing bug. That's probably why he's not playing much anymore, if I had to guess. I wanted to ask you kind of a similar question to what Cindy asked. She asked you what you like to do for fun. What would you be doing? What do you think you would like to do if you were not a professional golfer and you had to choose some other profession? Is there something else that you would like to do if golf was not in your repertoire, as it were?
I think I would really like to stay in the sports world, maybe not golf necessarily, but I think I would love to be a sports journalist, and mostly in writing. I think it's a cool thing people do. I love reading articles about athletes, and yeah, I think that would be something I'd like to do if I wasn't golfing.
No, that would be interesting for sure. Last question. If you had an audience of young girls like you were when you first took up the game and you had a few minutes to talk to them about becoming a golfer, what would maybe a little bit of that conversation be like? What would you advise them?
I would say the first thing is, like, when you're a kid, you just have to enjoy playing. You just have to find your love for it and enjoy being out there. Maybe having some friends while you're at it helps. And then I would say to just work hard and dream big, and yeah, just do the best you can.
Well, congratulations again, Valerie, on your win and first win of the season on the Epson Tour. And you're at what's the next event that you're going to be at? It's this week, right? Where
yes,
are you playing this week?
We're playing at Alachua Country Club, I think. It's in Longwood, Florida.
Mm-hmm. So you're looking at win number two?
I'm just trying to play as good as I can and see where that takes me.
Well, you got a good attitude and a good start to the season. Valerie, thank you very much for joining us this morning, and congratulations again from both of us, and best of luck as you continue through the season. Hopefully you'll come back and talk to us again.
Yep, thank you, guys. I appreciate it.
Good luck, honey. I want some chocolate chip cookies.
Okay.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, me too. All right. Thank you very much, Valerie. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
All right. That was Valerie Plata. Winner of the 2024 Florida's Natural Charity Classic. Interesting. You know, it's interesting the different perspectives, don't you agree, from player to player? You know, we talk to different players. Some, you can tell, are very, very more aggressive in their personality and that. And there's others that, just like Valerie said, kind of chills, right?
That's for sure.
Yeah.
That is
and,
for sure.
that always makes it fun. All right, we're going to take a real fast break, and then you and I are going to come back, and we're going to put together a realistic timeline for your game improvement. We'll be right back.
The following ad is sponsored by Golf Tips Magazine.
Are you tired of being short off the tee? And what about those three putts? Forget about it. It's time you got serious about your game. Golf Tips, the most in-depth magazine in the industry. For over 30 years, Golf Tips has delivered expert content such as the latest golf instruction from America's top pros, simple-to-follow practice and game improvement drills, fitness and mental game tips, equipment, training aids, accessory and apparel reviews, golf destinations and travel tips for every budget, and so much more. Don't miss a single issue. Go to golftipsmag.com and subscribe today.
All right, welcome back. You're with Cindy and Ted on the Women of Golf Show, and we're going to slip into a discussion, if you will, a realistic timeline for your golf game to improve, of course. And I think for most people, depending on, and we're going to go under the assumption here just to sort of preface this discussion, that like most golfers in today's market, if you will, and we're not talking professional, we're talking amateur. They may only have 1 to maybe 3 days per week that they can dedicate to practice and or playing golf. So I broke this down into a number of areas. The first one is their first month to 3 months. This is really what most people, I think a lot of people are going to say to themselves. So I'm going to read out some things and then we'll talk about each of the areas. So from month 1 to 3, you're certainly going to be visiting the driving range and hopefully the golf store somewhat frequently. You're going to be going into the pro shop and whatnot. You're certainly going to miss the ball a lot and will feel impossible to hit the ball where you are aiming. So you're going to have that feeling. You think, I have no idea what I'm doing. That's something that you might say to yourself. And when playing on the golf course, you're probably going to lose a few balls and you're likely going to be picking it up if you're polite. Before you finish each hole in order to keep pace. You'll hit a couple of good shots that will have you saying, wow, that was amazing. I love this game. And then there's probably going to be moments when you're going to feel like you want to quit, but we don't want you to give in. So the first few months, Cindy, are crucial. And there's one thing that I left out here, and I did it purposely because this is something we're going to talk about, obviously, and that is working with a professional. But this is kind of the mindset, wouldn't you agree, that a lot of people that have never played the game or new to the game, some of the points that I brought up are things that they're going to say to themselves. Would you agree? And what do you think about that?
Yeah, I agree. But I also believe that, what do I want to say? It depends on, you know, what you're working on. You could make a change that you understand and get it right away. It's not like, oh, this is going to be terrible. Oh, my God.
Right.
It might not take forever.
Right. Right, exactly. It's going to depend on the level of commitment. I mean, said this many, many times over the years, is the first thing you have to establish is why. Is the why are you there? Why are you playing? What is it that you're looking to accomplish? And what level are you looking to play? If you want to be a better player, then obviously that's going to take a deeper commitment. But I think for most people, there's a lot of confusion at this point. And I would say that, and I want you to talk a little bit about this here in a moment as I set it up, but in the first month to 3 months, it is crucial for you to get with a teaching professional, certified teaching professional, and get a game plan and work through the process with them, get them to go. And I'm going to let you talk about it in more detail, but this is if you want to become a better player, this is a must that you have to do in this early stage. And I'm going to let you talk a little bit about that, what you need to do for somebody that's just coming out of the gate.
Well, I would not look, because you don't know what you need to fix. And if you're going to look at YouTube, you're going to assume you know what you're talking about. And you're going to assume you think you know what you need to fix. And I wouldn't do that because you're going to probably mess yourself up. So I would have someone else look at you. And I wouldn't just go to anyone. I would investigate, you know, who's around your city that you could go to. I would investigate the teachers in your area, and I would maybe even go watch them give a lesson. Sit back and, you know, watch them to see, do I want to take a lesson from this person? Investigate what they teach, what do they believe, who do they help? I would investigate. You're talking about your golf game, and you're going to spend some money trying to fix yourself. And then I would go ask them, what do they believe? I would look them up online, and then I would maybe take one lesson. I suggest people come in for an intro lesson or a new student assessment. Come in once, see if you like me and you like it, and I help you get better. If I don't help you get better, don't come back. If I help you get better and you hit it really good, then come back more. If not, don't come back. What do you think?
Yeah. Yeah, no, I agree. I think it's important because, again, this is part of the learning process in anything. There's I think it's a pivotal point because, you know, we talked about here recently on the show, and one of our guests mentioned the statistics coming from the National Golf Foundation that particularly in the women's market, that there were 800,000 plus new women in 2023 that came to this game. And some of them may be coming back. Some of them may be the first time. I mean, I don't know what the parameters of the statistics were, but the reason I bring that up is what you don't want to happen is to have a big influx of new golfers coming to this game and not knowing what to do and not having a sense of direction, because the points that I raised are what commonly, and I mean, there's others too, but those are just a few general ones I jotted down, where, you know, they're wanting to go out, that they're wanting to learn the game. They don't have a clue as to what to do. They don't have a sense of direction where to go. And, you know, they might pick up a few things from watching other players or watching other people, but sometimes it may not be picking up the good things. So you're exactly right. You need to do some research. Go to the driving range and or go to, you know, if you're going to a local public course or something where you can get easier access, and watch the pro. You know, if they're working on the range with somebody, watch and listen if you can to what they're doing. Go have a conversation with them and get an idea. Like you said, if you're going to be compatible. I mean, some people just rub you the wrong way, and it's nothing personal. It's just everybody has different personalities. Some people like a little bit more, and I don't want to say aggressive because that's not really the right word, but somebody that is more assertive in their instruction. Some people maybe want a more passive instructor that's not quite in your face all the time. It depends on the level of player you want to be too. I mean, sometimes you need that more aggressive coach. So there's a lot of factors that go on in that, and then you need to really learn the game. Not just learning how to play the game, but you need to have an understanding of the game as well. Comes into the next section, the 3 month, the 12 month, because, and I'm going to read a few points here, and one of them you actually already mentioned, but so you're going to start at this point, hopefully if you've gotten off to a good footing, you're going to start hitting some more consistent shots, particularly at the range, and now you're maybe going to be able to play on the golf course and even finish a few holes without having to pick up. The last one, as you pointed out, yeah, stay off of YouTube. Unless you're working with a coach who has their own videos and they want you to see a few of their videos, that's one thing to, that, you know, game improvement and so forth. But, yeah, it's just going to add. If you start going on there surfing through all these, you know, videos from, you know, Tom, Dick, and Harry, and they're not, you know, professionals or what have you, it's just going to add to the confusion. So this is an area after you've done your due diligence, if you will, in the beginning. This is where you're going to start to see some improvement. And this is really, I think, from 3 months on, you really want to start having a more prominent game plan. What are your thoughts?
I agree. I mean, everything you said is true. You got to understand what you're trying to work on. And again, you know, if you're just a beginner, what are you trying to do? You want to learn how to hit the ball in the air. You got to be very careful of the committee of A. I mean, again,
yeah,
people are going to try to give you advice. It could be your friend, your neighbor. It could be a total stranger at the range. I had a couple of women say that they stopped coming to the driving range where I teach because there's a person that's right underneath me. I teach on the upper level that won't stop trying to help them. I said, well, go to the other end of the range. And they walked up to the counter and said, you know, this person won't stop talking to them. And it's a public facility, so they can't really do anything. Again, it's terrible because this person won't shut up. And they think they know what they're talking about. And this person walks up to them every single time they're there. And whatever, you know what I'm saying.
I think there's probably an ulterior motive there. That's where, and I don't advocate any violence, that's where a taser comes in handy. But no, I'm only kidding. I don't suggest or recommend that. But no, you're exactly right. You get people, and I've seen it too. I've you know, years ago, I remember growing up and, you know, you'd go up to the local range and there'd always be somebody, you know, walking up and saying, oh, well, I noticed you were doing this and let me see if I can help you in that. And they're not really qualified. And they're well-intended, but I suspect there's other motives there, but yeah, you've got to make sure that, and you want to make sure that you're working with somebody that you kind of gel with. And I'm talking about your teacher professional or your coach, and You want to make sure that they're understanding. The most important thing, I think, between coach and student is this. The coach has to be a good listener. It's great to give instruction. It's great to do all these things. You need to make sure that they really are hearing what it is that you're saying. Because there's a lot of people that just are head nodders. And they go, oh, okay, yeah. And they don't really understand what the coach is saying to them. You have to ask questions, and you need to understand the parallel between the two. There has to be good communication on both ends. And you have to make sure that the person that you're working with, both from the student's perspective and teacher's perspective, that you're listening to one another, not just talking over one another. Would you agree with that? I mean, you have to make sure that the coach is understood. Yeah, because otherwise you're just going to go through the process, and then a month or two later, you're not going to be happy, right? Either one's not going to be happy because the student's not getting it, and the coach is thinking they're going down one direction, thinking it's going to help, and the student really doesn't have an idea what they're talking about. So that's extremely important, right?
Absolutely. Again, the ball, you know, the results are going to be speak for themselves. You know, you got to understand what you're trying to get at, and the results of the ball are going to, you know, speak for themselves. If you're hitting it better, needless to say, it's going to work.
Exactly. And now, you know, you're going to drift. If you've made it this far, you're now drifting into year two. And this is when golf begins to get really fun, because you've got a little better understanding. You've been working with somebody for a number of months. And obviously, depending on where you live, hopefully you have a chance to work on things all year round. Sometimes you might have to take a little break because of weather. But with the onslaught of indoor facilities, there's really no excuse anymore. But so it's getting a little bit more fun. You're learning to play full rounds of golf on the course and actually are able to keep up a little bit with some of the more experienced players, and you actually start caring more about your score, trying to break some of those barriers, like shooting under 100 or 90 or what have you, depending on your level. So this is when I think it really, again, becoming a much better player. So once you've been working with them for that first year, and now they're willing to keep on with year two, what do they need to understand here? What happens at this point from your perspective?
Well, again, it depends how much are they playing, you know, do they enjoy what they're doing? Are they lowering their handicap? Are they working on their game? Again, this requires a commitment from the player. Are they doing that? They may not, right?
Right.
How many people really work on their game for 2 or 3 years?
Right.
I don't know that
well,
many.
Right. And the truth of the matter is, and this is including playing, you should always be working on your game, even the best players. This is something that I think a lot of amateurs don't get. You know, they see players, you know, like Valerie coming up, and they see more experienced players like Tiger and, you know, over the years, Jack and all of the great LPGA players that have come before. And what they don't understand is they are always, always working on their game. They've certainly reached a level of play that they are very competent and able to go around and win tournaments and compete. But they're always working on their game. They're always trying to improve what it is that they're doing. So it's interesting when you see amateurs who go out there, and that's why I said in the beginning, these are really, we're talking about people that might spend 1 to 3 days a week. 3 days obviously is better, but we understand not everybody has that kind of time frame in today's economy, in today's market, out there at least once a week. And ideally 2 times a week. And that includes some play in there as well, not just, you know, beating balls at the range. No offense, Alan. But, you know, you have to make some kind of a commitment. Otherwise, you're not going to improve unless you've got some God-given talent that you're just have a natural ability to hit the ball. But you're not going to see any improvement if you don't make some kind of a commitment. So it sounds daunting when you hear, 2 years, now we're going to move into 3 years. where, you know, now you're starting to become a good enough player that you're able to play some even nicer golf courses. Maybe you're going to a resort, you know, you and your spouse are going to go to a resort and they've got some great golf courses. Maybe you're even going to think about getting about equipment, maybe an upgrade or getting a instead of a hand-me-down or whatever you've been using, now you're going to be looking and be hopefully being a little bit more serious. You're starting to understand, as they call it, the golf lingo a little bit more, and maybe even gone to the point where you've invested in some golf apps or other gadgets like a rangefinder. So, you know, to sum it up, you're starting to become a more a seasoned golfer by year three. And it could happen sooner, again, depending on your commitment. I think that we want to get across here is being realistic with your expectations. This is not, you know, carved in stone. Everybody's not going to react the same way or have this, but I think the purpose of this discussion was really to say, okay, here's typically at this stage where most people, given the parameters I said at the beginning, are going to be at. Where you go from there depends on you. So you might have somebody, as an example, who spends very little time and is going to see very little results. On the other hand, you're going to see somebody that puts in a lot of time that's going to start to see noticeable results. And by the time they get into 3 years of doing that, they're going to become, certainly not going to be necessarily playing on tour, but they're going to be a much more seasoned golfer and they're going to enjoy the game a little bit more. Your thoughts?
Absolutely. I mean, again, if someone's really committed to work on their game that much, in 3 years, they can make a noticeable improvement. I mean, they can really get better. Question
right.
is, are they going to do this? And
right.
and you know what? I'd love to have that challenge. I'd love to see what could happen. I think it would
right.
be really, really fun
right.
to see what someone could do, you know, in
right.
3 years.
Right, exactly. And I think if you when you're talking to that new student, this is a conversation. It's a process. It's not something that's going to happen overnight. Again, some people are naturally athletic and maybe can grasp certain concepts a little bit quicker because they've played other sports. And that's, you know, something that they're able to do a little bit quicker. I've had friends that, you know, just naturally had a talent. They played baseball and other sports and were able to grasp things a little bit quicker than I had others that just didn't have the same coordination or abilities, and it took them a little bit longer. But it is a process. You know, golf can be a lot of fun. Even if you're not playing at an elite level, as our guest earlier is, it can be a lot of fun and great enjoyment, and it's a game that lasts for many, many years. But you get out of it what you put in it. So if you're
Absolutely.
Not putting anything in it, right, you're not getting it. Yeah, exactly. You're not getting anything out of it if you don't put anything into it. And I think probably, and correct me if I'm wrong, I think one of the biggest mistakes, and this is, again, why we're having this conversation, is unrealistic expectations. People come in this game with unrealistic expectations, thinking that, you know, they'll take a couple of lessons and – I mean no disrespect to any professionals out there, but again, if the person's not engaging and not really working through the process, they're not going to see improvement and they're going to get frustrated and they're just going to drop off. And that's ultimately what ends up happening in some cases. Sometimes it's the coach's fault that they're not communicating effectively with the person, but a lot more often than not, it's because the person on the other end is not really asking those questions or they're afraid to say, I don't understand, because they don't want to look stupid. So I think communication between the two are paramount.
Oh,
you agree?
Absolutely. Oh, absolutely. For sure.
So what do you say when you're first starting out with a student, Cindy? What do you say? Because obviously you're going to, I mean, you've been doing this long enough that you can pretty much spot them a mile away. When you see that somebody's really not understanding and you're explaining whatever it is that you're talking to them about and you can just sense they're not getting it, how do you, without, you know, coming out and you don't want to feel like you're embarrassing them or whatever, how do you approach that person? Do you ask them questions like, do you understand what I'm talking about here, or explain to me, what's the process that you engage them with when you see that happening?
Try to do this a different way.
Right.
Let's try. I'm not sure you're understanding what I'm saying. Let's try a different mm-hmm. thought. And then I give them a different way to think about what I want them to do. And then I say, let's try this thought. And then I see, does that make more sense to you? And they might go, oh, yeah. Oh, okay. Or no. I said, well, that doesn't look like it's working.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And then
yep.
Does that better or is the other way better? That I want to make sure that you get what I'm saying. And if not, you got to tell me, Cindy, I don't get this. And
yep.
then they're like, oh, okay. I said, make sure, because if you don't get it, it's not going to work, you know. And then I say, would you rather have me, do you want to see it, feel it, or hear it? And they might look at me like, what are you talking about? Okay, let's mm-hmm. pretend we have to go somewhere you've never been and you have no idea how to get there and you can't Google it. And would you want me to tell you how to get there? Would you want to read written directions or do you want to look at a map? Oh. And then they say, I want to read written directions. Well, that tells me you want to feel it. Oh.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, now I want you to feel the club. Left gives it to right. Right slaps it. Oh. Okay, well, then now I'm talking in their language, then it makes more sense. You know what I mean? And then it
yep.
might make more sense. Then they get it, blah, 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 whatever.
Yeah, and I'm so glad you actually went there with that, because that was actually what next point I was going to talk to you about is you have to establish their language, and meaning that, you know, are they visual?
Audio,
visual. Right.
Yeah.
Right, exactly. And you've got to understand that, because that makes a huge difference. If you've got a visual person, you're trying to explain something and they're not seeing it in their mind's eye, you've missed the conversation. And that's what I think when I was saying earlier, what happens with a lot of students is they don't, if you're not communicating them in one of those three areas and they're not understanding what you're saying, they're less apt to be, I mean, some are very good about it, but a lot of people are very nervous, especially new golfers. They don't want to feel like they're, you know, stupid, and they don't want to feel like they don't understand anything, but it's because you're not speaking to them in the language they need to hear and need to learn in. And that's nothing to be ashamed of or anything. It's just everybody learns at a different pace, number one, but also learns through different methods. And teacher doesn't understand that or hasn't established that very early on, then you could be going for 2, 3, 4, 5 lessons and having the same problem where you're not getting it. And what ultimately ends up happening is if they don't understand, they're less likely and excited about going to practice it. And that's another big thing as well. I mean, it's great to come for lessons and get all of the things, but if you're not excited about wanting to go out and put it into practice, then it's for naught. And that's another area that really hinders a lot of people from advancing, is they just don't, they think, well, okay, I'll just, and yes, you have to go to the golf course. You can't just be a range rat, but you also have to learn and you have to put those things in practice. You know, Valerie talked about how, you know, she's got a really tight short game. So she obviously goes to the range and she works on her short game. So if that's an area that you need improvement with, then you need to be going to the range and need to work on that. And then you put it into practice when you get out in the golf course, but you need to be able to establish some sort of a routine. And that's something that your coach or a teach professional can help you with, right? I mean, when you get to that point that you're now putting a game plan together, you're going to give them, you're not just going to say, well, okay, here's the lesson today, and we'll see you next time. You're going to give them some things to work on, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's what all good teachers should do, you know?
Yeah, and just don't use the word homework, because some people don't like that. I was, for one, would be like that. But all kidding aside, but you have to give them, whether it's some drills or whether it's some things for them to be, you know, mentally focusing on when they're out there practicing, you have to give them some guidance, because that's what you're there for. You're not just there to teach them, but you're also there to give them some guidance and sort of, you know, mentally hold their hand when you're not there. Because it's easy when you're there. I mean, it's easy to do a lot of things when you're front and center with your student. But when you're not there, then they have to pick up the baton and they have to get out there and do the things that you've been working on that particular week. And I think, in my personal opinion, And this is not to push people into instruction. Obviously, if you're going to be a better player, you've got to be working with that instructor weekly, every week. If you're not, you know, looking to be the next, you know, Tiger or whoever, I think every couple of weeks, I think every other week, again, depending on what you want to, you know, how good of a golfer you want to be, but you need to be coming out every couple of weeks, because if you're doing it once a month, by the time you come the next time, you've forgotten half the stuff. And the worst part from a coach's perspective is having to spend the first 10 or 15 minutes repeating what you talked about the last time, right?
Absolutely. You're just doing the same thing over and over again and never moving to the next level.
Right. And I think, obviously, for younger students, you know, so you work with all levels, but you work with a lot of newcomers to the game, but at a young level, and they're a little bit different. Tell me, so that people understand, what's some of the noticeable difference that you see with some of these young girls and young boys that you're working with, and I'm talking about the juniors, that you see in how they approach the game compared to maybe some of your adult students? Is it their enthusiasm? Is it their willingness to sort of get right in there and dig into it? Or is there more apprehension on some of the older students?
You know what? I think there's a little more, the older students might pay more attention than the younger students.
Mm-hmm.
I think
less distractions.
I think the younger students might be thinking, I think the younger students are trying, they're just raking and hitting. And the older students are thinking more about it, the process. Because I think sometimes the younger students aren't worried about the consequence. They just want to hit the ball. And I think then, you know, they're like, oh, let's just have fun and whack away until they get in a tournament. And then they lose, and then they want a medal, and then they're like, oh, now I need to pay attention. So I think they're like, oh, I want to win. Well, now you have to line it up, you know.
Right.
You can't just walk up and whack.
Yeah.
So I think the older students pay more attention because they understand consequences. The younger students, especially when they're new, they don't pay attention because they don't understand consequences.
Yeah, and they're excited. You know, and again, it's good that they're excited about wanting to hit the ball. I mean, that's what they're there for. But at the same time, they don't understand how to put it. Yeah, they don't understand how to put it all together quite yet, and to make it, to become successful at it. So realistically, just sort of wrap up. This is just sort of a realistic timeline, if you will. So again, you know, there might be some things here and there that might be a little bit different, but you know, initially in the first few months, you want to make sure that number one, you go and meet with a professional, talk to them, have them do an assessment where you're at, what your expectations are, what you want to do, what you want to accomplish, all of these different things. And then obviously they're going to check your abilities to see where you're at now. And you want to do that, and you want to start off on the right foot. Stay away from online videos unless you're working with somebody that is using specific things as part of their teaching. That's okay. But don't just surf through the internet, because there is a lot of garbage out there. Some are well-intended, but there's just a lot of misinformation, or you're getting their own personal injection into it, which, you know, might seem fine on the surface. But the truth of the matter is they don't have the expertise or the experience. And a lot of times what may apply to them doesn't necessarily apply to you. So again, you're taking a risk there. So if you want to become a better player and you want to get out and have some fun, you want to make sure right from ground zero that you're starting on a good foot. And then as you progress, you want to make sure that whoever you're working with is giving you and putting a game plan together that's going to help you increase and improve in stages, so that you're not rushing into it too much, but at the same time, you're moving at a pace that's comfortable with you, that you're seeing results, and that you're able to enjoy a realistic game improvement and not just a bunch of phony promises, because unfortunately, there's a lot of those out there too. So on that note, I think we covered a lot of things, and I think hopefully people will take a good takeaway from that. But the bottom line is be realistic in whatever it is that you're doing. If you want to become a better player, just be realistic and have that conversation with your professional and get out there and do your homework a little bit. I hate to use that word, but it's the truth, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, unfortunately, we're always doing homework, even in our golden years. All right, on that note, I want to thank everybody for tuning in this morning and listening to the Women of Golf Show. We enjoyed having you join us. And again, congratulations to Valerie Plata, our winner at the Florida's Natural Charity Classic on the Epson Tour. And I think she's going to do very well in the years to come. So we'll be excited to watch her. And thanks for joining us. On behalf of Cindy Miller, I'm Ted Oderico, and we will see you next week right here on the Women of Golf Show. God bless everybody. Bye-bye. Thanks, Cindy.
Thank you for joining us. We hope you enjoyed listening to this week's Women of Golf Show. Ted and Cindy wish to thank this week's special guests. Remember to join them every Tuesday from 9 to 10 a.m. Eastern here on the iGolf Sports Network or on any of these social media platforms, iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, CastBox, TalkStream Live, and of course Spotify. To get updates on the show, you can follow the Women of Golf's Facebook page at www.facebook.com/womenofgolf. This has been a production of the iGolf Sports Network.